and welcome to the latest edition of the Mimiverse Monthly Audiocast. I am your host, writer-director Christopher R. Mim, and I have to ask, are you there? Are you listening? I sincerely hope so, because what's the point of doing a podcast if no one's listening? Granted, if like you're just someone who likes the lilt of my voice and find it weirdly soothing, or maybe you sleep to it because it's like I'm one of those sleep apps that play white noise, and I'm just your white noise. If I'm your white noise, I'm going to say I'm proud to be your white noise. But if you're actually listening to what it is I have to say, I have a lot of interesting stories to share this month and some very cool updates on what's going on in the Mimiverse. So let's jump into it, shall we? First off, you may notice that my voice maybe sounds a little weird. Well, part of that is where I am recording this month. Everything's kind of crazy in my life. It always seems to be. I have lots of kids. I make movies. I'm a busy guy. The reason things sound different this month is because I am in a car recording this while my daughter Alice, you all know Alice from the movies, is currently in the curling club right now practicing. Why is she practicing? Beyond the fact that she really likes to play the sport of curling and is quite good at it, it's because next week, from literally tomorrow, she's going to be trying out to represent the United States of America in the sport of curling at the Youth Olympics. She is participating in the Youth Olympic trials next week in Denver, Colorado. So she's here getting some last-minute practice in to make sure she's at the top of her game in the hopes of achieving immortality by going off to the Youth Olympics. So I'm sitting here as the guy who drives her around because she's only 15. She's not old enough to drive herself. So I'm here in the parking lot while she's inside practicing on the ice. And honestly, my house is so crazy all the time and there's always people making noise that this is actually the easiest, quietest place I could be right now. In my car, in a mostly empty parking lot, near a curling club. That's why, if things sound a little different, and I'm guessing it's going to sound different. I don't actually know because I'm recording this and can't hear it because I just record this on my phone. Did you know that? I just record this on my phone. It's amazing the things that cell phones can do, one of which is that you can make pretty decent sounding recordings anywhere you want. Yay, smartphones. Anyway, so Alice is inside practicing, trying to be the best that she can be, the best of the best of the best with honors. And I'm out here talking to you guys. Lots of cool stuff happened in the last month, the biggest of which was we did the premiere of Annihilate All Humans. Were you there? Did you enjoy it? Did you have fun? Did you come to the producer's picnic the night before? Wait, you weren't invited? Why not? Oh, probably because you weren't one of the producers. Did you know that you can become a producer of my movies? You can get the credit as a producer? It'll cost you a little bit more than your average contribution, but you can be a producer. You can go down in history as a movie producer. And you get to come to the producer's picnic, which we threw the night before the premiere. And we had a bunch of folks come in from out of town, and I grilled burgers for them. I mean, I cooked for them. I'm a pretty decent cook. I could cook for you. I grilled them up some burgers. We had chips and cookies, and you know, it was a classic picnic. It was a little humid, but not unbearable. It was not crazy, crazy hot, just a little humid. And we had a good time. Lots of folks showed up. We hung out. We talked. We played Coob. And if you have no idea what that is, it's like a Scandinavian-Norwegian lawn game, which my family plays a lot and weirdly introduces to everybody. And we always like to demonstrate it at events when we can because it's fun. It's a low-stress yard game that doesn't require, like, running, but requires throwing things at other things, which who doesn't like to do that? If you want to look it up, it's called Coob. I think it's spelled K-U-B-B. Looks like cub, but it's Coob. So, yeah, we did the producer's picnic. We had folks come in from as far away as Louisiana. This fantastic guy named Marty Benoit, who I met down at the Lake Charles Film Festival in Louisiana, came up, and he's one of the producers, and a good friend of mine, Matthew Pavasic, came in with his spouse from Maryland. And we had Craig Nico, who's the owner of Craig's Curling Shoes, who's one of the producers, came, and the Perkinses were there, and several actors and well-known faces within the Mimiverse. And it was a good time. Again, a little warm for my tastes. I definitely don't like it when it's hot and sticky. Hot and sticky is like my least favorite thing in the world. But it was warm and a little bit sticky. So it was getting toward hot and sticky, but it wasn't hot and sticky. And then we did the premiere, which it was a good premiere, especially post-COVID, where I feel like we're sort of building our way back up to where we were. I was talking to, of all people, Shannon McDonough yesterday about how the last couple of premieres have gone, how things have been post-COVID. And I was talking about specifically the Annihilate All Humans premiere, and attendance was probably about 3/4 full. For as much as I'd love to sell out again, that's pretty damn good given that we had 2 years off from in-theater premieres due to COVID. And last year for the day the Earth abruptly almost ended, I'd capped it at half. So we got about half. And then this time I didn't cap it and we got 3/4 full. All things considered, I'm happy. But I was telling Shannon McDonough, I realized that we sold out every premiere from about 2010, which was Destination Outer Space, all the way up to Queen of Snakes in 2019, which was the last one we did before COVID hit. And The Beast Walks Among Us in 2020 was already on pace pretty early to sell out. So up to that point for almost 10 years, we sold out every premiere. And this was back before The Heights redid the seats. In 2019, The Heights took out the old seats and put in newer, bigger seats and expanded the aisles. And they went from like 400 seats down to about 240. And so going back as far as 2010, we sold out 400 seats. And then when it came to Queen of Snakes, we were able to actually shoot in The Heights. And we were able to shoot in there literally a week before they pulled the old seats out and put in the new ones. Even for the Queen of Snakes, we sold that out at 240. And then I think I was at 200 seats pre-sold when everything shut down in 2020. So a lot of people got their money back. We got, I think it was like 160, 170 or something this time, which in a theater that seats 240 people, that feels pretty damn full. It's like the front seats are open and there was a little space for people to socially distance a little, but not a lot. So it was good. It was cool. I was happy to see the crowd grow from last year to this year. Last year, again, I think people were still like, I don't know, movies. This year, we had some nice folks come out that last year would never have because of the pandemic. For instance, my good friend Stephen D. Sullivan and his wife came out to the premiere, and I was so happy to get Steve Sullivan. I was so happy to get him to come out to the premiere because the pandemic has been especially hard on Steve. He hasn't done a lot of cool, fun stuff out of an understandable abundance of caution. And it was really nice to see him feel comfortable enough to come see us and come to the movie. And he got to experience it. And that made me really happy. I mean, all things being what they are, I was so happy with the Annihilate All Humans premiere. Except for the rain. If you were there, you know this story, but if you weren't, my goodness. All of our premieres follow the same pattern. I worked out this is how they work years and years ago, and they've followed the same schedule ever since, which is that doors open at 6:30, movie starts at 7:30. It starts with some old newsreels I pick out, and then some old trailers, and then we watch the movie. Then afterwards, we sell DVDs, we sign stuff, people get to take their picture with the monsters, and then it's all over by 10 o'clock. Partially because I have to be out of the theater by 10 o'clock or I have to pay the owner more money. I mean, he's very cool. I mean, we've never really gone over much, and usually by the time it hits about 9:45, I'm like kicking people out, like, get out of here, I don't want to spend money. And of course, we've gone over by a few minutes here and there, but he understands. I think he means like if it hits 10 o'clock and we obviously aren't showing signs of leaving, he's going to like tack on some money because he's got to stay there when he wants to go home. Granted, for him, going home means going upstairs because he lives above the Heights. Anyway, doors 6:30, movie 7:30. Usually, we get a nice line outside because the owner of the Heights will change the marquee to read whatever the name of the movie is, and I get a cool picture of people lined up to see my movie. This year, that didn't happen. Now, I always show up at like 6 because I need to set some stuff up and get everybody in place. So when we open the doors, because we run the whole thing except the snack bar, basically. My good friend Kira Pontiff, who you know from several movies, including Guns of the Apocalypse and The Giant Spider, she always volunteers to take tickets at the door, which is awesome. Jim Norgard, who you guys know as Dear God No, Dr. Gabriel, often will stand there to get people to notice that there is a silent auction and they should sign up for stuff. The only thing that sucks is that in the summers, the lobby is very, very warm because it's not air conditioned, but the theater is air conditioned, so it's nice inside. But outside in the lobby, it's always a bit warm. Anyway, we have this process down. This is how it works. This is what we do. I got there at 6 o'clock, as I normally do, with a few helpers. We loaded stuff in. We started setting up our little merch table. We set up the silent auction stuff. And then at 6:25, I start noticing some people starting to line up. And then the skies opened up and a torrential downpour fell on the heads of everybody there. All these folks were like cowering under the marquee. And I was like, okay, open the doors early. Just open the doors. The theater was actually showing Oppenheimer, which I was going to make a great joke at the premiere about how Annihilate All Humans is basically just a companion piece for Oppenheimer. And if you've seen both, you get it. And I totally forgot to make it. I'm mad. Anyway, so Oppenheimer was playing beforehand and that let out at like 6:15. So we were clear to open the doors whenever. I was just wait till 6:30, mostly so I can get that photo. But at 6:25, downpour. Just a freak storm that was not supposed to happen was basically circling above the theater. I mean, it really wasn't anywhere else in the Twin Cities metro area, but damn it, if the Heights Theater didn't get deluged by rain. So it came down like crazy, and so we opened the doors early so people could come in, and I didn't get my line outside the movie theater photo. I did make a point to take a picture of the marquee when I got there. I was like having those marquee photos of my movie titles up on old school marquees in particular. So we let people in. So all these folks are like running through the rain, and it rained from about 6:25 to 7:20, almost the entire hour when people are trying to get into the theater. So all these folks are stuck running in the rain because parking at the Heights used to be better than it is now. Let's just say that. There used to be like a parking garage, a parking ramp, as we Minnesotans call it. There used to be a parking ramp just behind the Heights. The Heights actually shares a parking lot with a church. Now, here's the thing. In the past, the church never cared if people parked in their parking lot if they're going to the Heights, because the actual Heights parking lot is tiny. It's like two little side lots on either side. This year, the church is now under new management, and they were sitting out there like yelling at people, basically, don't park here, we're going to tow you, we're going to tow you, which not very Christian of you to be that mean. So people had to find other places to park. Well, the parking ramp that used to be across the street is gone. It's now an apartment building, so no one could park there. So they had to park on the street, which there's not a lot of street parking, or you have to park kitty corner from the Heights behind another building, and you have to basically walk half a block to get there. Normally, that wouldn't be a big deal. Not so much when it's pouring rain. And it's not just a little rain. It's like those Hollywood rains that they do to add the drama. Movies like The Notebook, you know, it's like really coming down in sheets. Central Avenue, which is what the Heights is on, was a freaking river. I mean, not even a joke. It looked like a damn flowing stream. It was crazy how much water was coming down. Everyone showing up soaked to the bone. Was definitely something. I don't know what I'd say it was, but it was definitely something. And again, it let up right as everyone who was going to be there had already showed up. But they were all wet. So that was fun. I did get a picture. Stephanie, my wife, and I snuck outside after the rain ended at 7:20 and got a picture of me under the marquee. And you can totally still see the river of water flowing down Central Avenue. So that was cool. But that's never happened, ever. We've had really hot days where it's like 100 degrees outside and people are baking in suits and nice dresses, but never rain, which is strange after all these years to never have gotten rain on a premiere day. But it's like rain on premiere day. It's ironic, don't you think? I apologize for doing that. Once everything got going, it went really well. It was star of the movie Tyler Haynes' birthday that day, like his actual birthday. So that was cool. We sang happy birthday to him. And there was a really nice lady there who we sang happy birthday to as well because she turned like 86. Tyler is in his 40s, so it's not as impressive as the lady who's almost 90, who came out to the movie. That was really cool.
For her to show up
and spend her birthday evening with us. So we did some birthday stuff. We sang some songs. We put a birthday boy sash on Tyler, and then we showed the movie, and again, it was pretty damn well received, and I've been very, very, very happy with the response. It's been overwhelmingly positive. A couple nitpicks here and there, but every movie gets that. It doesn't matter how good of a movie I make, someone's gonna think this part is not funny enough or not serious enough or whatever. I mean, you always hear people like, I like it, but. But everyone has that. Everyone has their own opinions. You know what they say about them. So I don't take it too personally unless someone's like, that's the worst movie ever. You should just stop making movies. Which some people are like that, and those people are just unhappy with themselves and their lives and need to grow up or something. Or I always think of it this way. If you're one of those people that just always talks about how much you love a thing and then constantly berate it and talk about how much it sucks, and I'm looking squarely at Star Wars and Star Trek fans who love to say how much they love something and then rip it apart every chance they get. I'm always happy to know and satisfied with the knowledge that no matter what happens, no matter what they think, at least I'm not them. They have to wake up every day, look at that face in the mirror and be like, this is me, this is who I am. And they're stuck with that. There's not much you can do to get away from that. I'm not them. I don't have to do that. And that makes me happy. So if you love something so much you hate it, well, that's your life you're wasting with all that negativity. That's on you. But anyway, Annihilate All Humans, I think it worked, and I think people were happy, and I got a really great response, and sales have been brisk, which is nice to see that people are picking up the new DVD and Blu-ray, and that alone has made me very happy. You know, I complain all the time about how people don't really want physical media anymore, and here I am being proven wrong, because people are buying it, and that makes me very happy, because sometimes it feels like I spend all this time working on a project and I release it and then it's like, well, that's that, moving on, and it gets almost forgotten, and that makes me sad. So it's nice to see that people are wanting to see this movie and are picking it up. I'm getting a lot of new customers, names I don't recognize, new folks who are just learning about the movies, and I'm seeing a handful of folks too who bought Annihilate All Humans and then a few days later, a week later, suddenly they're buying other movies too, which means they liked it enough, they're like, I want to see more. So that's pretty cool. I'm really happy with that. I'm happy with how it turned out. I'm happy with the response so far. What did you think? Did you like it? Were you at the premiere? Did you enjoy it? Are you looking forward to the next movie, which is the perfect segue into talking about the next movie, The Wad? Since we released Annihilate All Humans, I have been hard at work on the new film, The Wad, which is my take on The Blob, but it's also a fake documentary, which I have to say has been so fun and different to make so far. Principal photography has begun. It began shortly after the premiere, and I've been shooting stuff on and off throughout the month of August. It's been really fun and different. I'm doing all different techniques of things, of how I'm setting things up, how I'm miking things, the camera angles, the sound. It's a whole different bag of tricks. It's a whole different ball game. And it's really interesting to approach this project so differently than I would all my others, while simultaneously using basically everything I've learned up to this point in filmmaking to do something so different, yet not. What I've gotten so far, which is not a lot, I haven't filmed that much. There's a whole chunk of the script that all takes place outside, and I have to film it all before it gets too fall-like, because it all is supposed to take place at the same time of year, and I'm focusing on that stuff. There's a bunch of other stuff later that I can film in the winter, because it's all sit-down interview-style stuff. I'm going down my list of stuff I need to film outside, and everything I'm getting is really cool and unique and different. I mean, it's just different than anything I've ever done. And it's raised my enthusiasm level for filmmaking a lot. I mean, it's not that I was just like done with filmmaking. I like it, but you're doing a lot of the same things over and over again, and it becomes a little repetitive. And that doesn't mean that I'm not enjoying it. It's just that it becomes a little less exciting and new. sometimes variety is truly the spice of life. I keep saying having fun and I'm excited, but it's true. I'm having fun and I'm excited about this project and the stuff that I'm coming up with. So this leads me finally to address something I mentioned earlier, which is Shannon McDonough. You all know Shannon McDonough. She appeared early on in a lot of the movies. She was Julianne St. Marie in It Came From the World. She was Zita Marchek in The Giant Spider. You know her, you love her. I was excited that yesterday I was able to shoot a scene with Shannon McDonough. She's back. I'm happily pushing this so people are aware that Shannon McDonough is in this movie. She's not playing a huge role, but I got her in the movie, which to me feels like a big get. The Giant Spider was the last thing she did in 2013, so it's been 10 years since I worked with her, and God, I love working with Shannon. There's a handful of people I haven't worked with in a long time that I really want to work with again. Shannon McDonough and Katherine Hansen are at the top of that list of people that I haven't worked with in a long time. Dan Shervin's another one. I haven't worked with him in far too long. It was so cool to be with Shannon again and be making the movie, and she did such a great job. And she's playing Julianne St. Marie again, and she stepped right back into the role like no time had passed. And it's not fair because 10 years ago, I looked younger, and now I look like Santa Claus, and she doesn't look like she's aged at all. And it's not fair. It's not fair at all. She looks fantastic, and it's been 10 years, and it looks like she hasn't aged a day. The only big difference is she has a lot more tattoos, so we had to cover those up. But other than that, she doesn't look any different. Whereas, like I said, I'm freaking Santa Claus now. Whereas 10 years ago, I was thinner and had salt and pepper, and now it's just full-on chubby white guy with white hair, and I might bring you presents if you're good. But have you been good? And if not, have you at least been good at it? Anyway, so it was really fun to work with Shannon again and see Shannon again, and it felt like old times, and I loved it. So I'm working on the WOD. We're making progress. We're shooting scenes. We're moving forward. We're getting stuff done. And I've been editing as I go, and it's been really interesting to approach things so differently and to try and really do something wholly different than anything I've ever tried while simultaneously keeping it within my wheelhouse. It's been a really fun, I keep saying it, fun and exciting. It's really cool to be doing this, and it's rekindled that passion I have for making movies because it's a new challenge, which just leads me to realize that I should be challenging myself every time. And I feel like I have. Working with kids was a challenge. Working with kids 3 times in a row was a huge challenge. Annihilate All Humans was a giant challenge because of the sheer amount of special effects. And if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. It's like 3/4 of the movie is special effects. Everything with the aliens going on, and it was a big, cool challenge to pull it off. And I feel like I did. And this one is so out of left field and so unique by comparison that I'm super into this. And it feels really good because it's been far too long since I've really, really been into it to this level. I mean, it almost feels like the first time. What? It does. It feels like that feeling I felt when I was making the Monster Phantom Lake, because it feels a little, I don't want to say dangerous, but it feels a little seat of my pants, you know? Like, I am definitely making things up as I go because I haven't done things this way before. And so it's a little different. I keep saying fun, exciting, and different, but there's no better way to describe what this movie is and what working on it feels like. So I'm excited to keep working on it. And I've said excited so many times now, you should go back, re-listen to this episode, and make it a drinking game. And by the time you get to this point, you're going to need to go to the hospital. So yeah, I'm working on the WOD. I mentioned the producer's picnic, and just so you know, you can become a producer of the WOD and get your name on the poster. That's a big plus. And you get to be invited to the producer's picnic for when we do the big premiere next year. You can always do that through the newsletters. Whenever there's a newsletter mention of contributing to the movie, there's always a spot for the producer levels. Otherwise, if you just like my movies and you want to make sure they get made, please contribute at SaintEuphoria.com or through the Mimiverse Monthly newsletter. Get your name in the credits. Go for it. Do it. Everything you can do to help goes a long way. Every little thing helps. And so if you get a chance, please contribute to the movie. I promise you, you won't be disappointed when you finally see this movie next year. So I think that's probably good for this section of what's going on in the Mimiverse. I think it's now time for this month's edition of An Oral History of the Mimiverse. Last month on An Oral History of the Mimiverse, I talked a lot about making We're Skeeto and then mentioned at the end that this month I would be talking about the Monster Phantom Lake the Musical, and I've decided to keep that promise. As you know, the Monster Phantom Lake was released in 2006. It did very well. It played in lots of film festivals and won a bunch of awards. And to this day, I still meet people who tell me that, oh, I love all your movies, but the Monster Phantom Lake is my favorite. There's something about it that's a little bit special. And of course, without the Monster Phantom Lake, we wouldn't have all of this. So it's definitely something other compared to everything else. Going back to the Monster Phantom Lake and the making of it, Mike Cook. You all know Mike Cook. He's been in a lot of my movies. And he lives in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, which I hope I'm not giving too much information away for all you stalkers out there, you big cookie heads, as I'm sure you big fans are called. Because of Mike, a lot of my movies over the years have played at a few different places in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. In Eau Claire, Wisconsin, lives a man named Adam Boll. Adam Boll is a very talented composer and lyricist. He's also a teacher. And he knows Mike Cook because Mike has done a lot of theater in the Eau Claire area. And Adam has done a lot of theater in the Eau Claire area. So they knew each other. And because my movies were playing in Eau Claire at various places, Adam frequently would come to the screenings and events. And so I met him several times, and he's a very nice guy, very talented man. And somewhere along the line, he approached me and said, hey, I have this idea to do a musical theater version of The Monster of Phantom Lake that would be kind of like Little Shop of Horrors. What do you think? And I instantly took to the idea. I was like, I love that idea, but I would have no idea where to start because I am not a theater guy. I am and always have been the movie guy. I've only previously done some playwriting in high school. I've helped out doing AV stuff for the theater in junior high, but I never really participated in the production of a play, or I really haven't done anything. And so I had no idea how to start or where to start or what to do. It's a great idea, Adam, but now what? And he made it pretty clear that he could do pretty much everything as long as I adapted the script. I think he would have been willing to do it, but he wanted to give me some input into how it would play out on stage. I loved the idea, but for a couple years, it went nowhere. And every time I would see him at things, we'd talk about it. We'd email back and forth a little bit about it, but it never happened. For whatever reason, I always found myself far too busy to spend time on this cool idea because I was always making movies, and movies take up a lot of time and energy, so it was pretty hard for me to make it work. I mentioned a little bit in previous episodes that after 10 years, I wanted to take a bit of a break because I was feeling maybe a little burnt out after doing so much every year for 10 years. And I thought after Danny Johnson Saves the World, I'd take a little break. And I was a little burnt out with all the drama with some of the actors, some of the behind the scenes folks. I needed a break. Originally, I wanted to take a year off, and I only ended up taking off 3 months. But even that 3 months alone was worth it to center my mind and calm down and give myself the bug again to want to make movies. But that's not what this is about. This is about that weird break. I realized when I decided at the time, I'm going to take a year off. Now is my opportunity in 2015, after I released Danny Johnson Saves the World, to finally write The Monster Phantom Lake the Musical so Adam could go from there. And little did I know, he had already been working on ideas for songs and things. I mean, he was already steps ahead of me when I finally said, yeah, let's do it. And he basically gave me a list of songs and where he thought they would go in the play. I realized that now was my chance to move some things around, to even like fix some ridiculousness with the plot about like Lobo's wife looking exactly like Elizabeth and all these things. And I realized, well, this is my chance to fix a few of the problems that are part of the monster Phantom Lake that I didn't think too deeply about when I wrote the film. Adam just said, okay, well, here are the songs. Here's where I think it should be. Here's where I think the intermission should be. And we went back and forth about moving some things around, like the scene where the canoe cops die comes after the intermission. I mean, it's just all these things. And he wanted to incorporate a rock and a rolling all the way rambling and paddling along and do slightly more elevated versions of the songs than the ones I wrote and recorded that were just me. And I was all for it. I mean, it was perfect for what we wanted to do. And I told him, though, very early on, I'm like, look, I know nothing about this process of mounting a production, because the goal was always, I do the book, he does everything else as far as the development of the music and all that. And then we would try to mount a production of it, do it somewhere, put it on at least once. So I said, okay, that's fine, but I'm not going to do anything beyond adapt the script. And then I'm just going to turn it over to you. And we'll go from there. And he had already had discussions with Mike Cook about directing it, because Mike has done a lot of theater direction over the years, so he knew what he was doing. And once we got deeper into it, we roped in Ruby Gallinati, who has appeared in a few of my movies, but is really more of a technician. She's always proud of saying, I'm just a technician. I'm a lighting designer. That's what I do. And of course, I then roped her into being on camera too, which is what I do. And so we roped her in to help with the production. But at this stage, early on, it was just, I adapted the screenplay and sent it to Adam and was like, okay, do your magic. And he's like, okay, well, we'll go from here. I'll get in touch now that I have the script. And that's when I was like, okay, well, I've done my part. I guess I need to think about maybe making another movie because I'm bored. And that's when I decided to make Where's Skeeto Nazi Hunter. And of course, when I started writing the very beginnings of Annihilate All Humans, and you already know the story if you've already listened to the history of the Mimiverse over the past few months, Adam went off and basically created magic. While I was off making Where's Skeeto Nazi Hunter, he got the dream team together and he started putting all this stuff together, and suddenly he comes back to me and is like, let's do a Kickstarter, because what I would like to do, and this was all him, he's like, what I'd like to do is I'd like to mount a production of the Monster Phantom Lake the musical, and I want to do it at this awesome theater in Menominee, Wisconsin, this historic theater. He wanted to do the production at this cool theater, and he had a wish list of things he wanted to do. One is he wanted to make sure that he could get everything that would be required for a theater if they ever wanted to do the show. He wanted to get it all made so he could offer it. All the books, even recordings if you didn't have the orchestra required to do it. He wanted to do a cast album. He wanted to do it up as a big thing. And I was behind him 100%. The point was, though, is that we had to make sure that other people paid for it, because he and I could not afford to do this on our own. So we decided to do a Kickstarter. The Kickstarter ended up being wildly successful. We not only met our initial goal, which was just enough money to do the play somewhere, be that in a high school theater or a small black box somewhere, it wouldn't matter as long as we had just enough to be able to actually do the play live in front of people. Then we had all these stretch goals, like we want to do it in the Mabel Tainter Theater in Menominee. We want to film it and put it on DVD for people to be able to watch after. We want to be able to record a cast album. All these things that cost money. We were able to reach all of our stretch goals. It was kind of amazing. And at the time, we set some weird record for like the amount pulled in for a play in a small sized area or something. I don't remember. But at the time, it was like we actually hit some sort of weird milestone record with the amount of money we pulled in to make it possible. And it was awesome because it made it possible to do everything, including put out the DVD, including not only record a cast album, but put it out on CD, which of course in this day and age, who wants CDs? But some people still want CDs, and you can actually stream the music now on Amazon and I think Spotify and stuff. You know, we were able to do everything we wanted to do. But again, I was very hands-off in this process. The only thing I really did after we hit all those stretch goals is that I digitally mastered the CD, did all the album art and all this stuff, and I did the poster art for the actual play itself, because we had posters. And so, I mean, I did some stuff. I designed visual elements based on elements from the film, and I was able to master the CD and all that stuff. And I did, obviously, the DVD and all that. But outside of art stuff, I never had any involvement in the actual play itself, at least the production of it. All the hard work that went into like recording the CD or doing all the stuff for all the books that Adam put together and the actual play being put on at the Mabel Tainter Theater, which is an amazing classic historical theater. If you ever get a chance to see a show there, see a show there. So he and Mike Cook and Ruby ended up doing basically everything. I made it clear that I was like, I don't want any input into that because I really wanted to see how someone else would interpret what I did more than anything else. And it's the thing to this day, I wish a theater would pick it up and do it because I'd love to see someone else's interpretation of my show. But to date, we haven't gotten that, which is sad because if you're out there and you know anyone who's attached to a theater that's looking for interesting and new and fun, funny, weird shows to do, we have everything you need to do it. And that's the thing is we're not even charging people. A lot of these theaters, you have to pay money to license something. We're not even asking. The only thing we're asking is that you set aside tickets to your show so that I can go, Adam can go, Mike Cook can go, Ruby can go. Just set aside some comp tickets for us. So if we can make it to wherever you are, we can see the show. That's it. Otherwise, it's free for your theater to do it. And you can charge for tickets and keep that ticket money. But so far, no takers. Anyway, so I wanted to be hands-off because I wanted to see it with fresh eyes. See how it turns out. And I'm glad I did that. Because once they got to the point of doing dress rehearsals beforehand, and I actually ended up filming a couple of the dress rehearsals because I figured the more footage I could get from different angles and whatnot, the better off I would be. Because we had gotten enough money that I would be able to film the production and edit it down into a production DVD so people could see it. And I still sell it to this day, so if you haven't seen it, you can see it. It's also available on Amazon and the Roku channel, so you can watch it. It's really good. So I didn't really know a lot about it. I knew the songs because I had helped with the mastering of them, and I knew they were good. And of course, I knew the story itself because I wrote it. But to see it all for that first time, I went and watched, I think the first dress rehearsal, I didn't film anything because I just wanted to watch it. I just wanted to see it all come together for the first time and not be bothered to have to film stuff and all these things. I just wanted to see it. And I remember I sat sort of in the back of the theater and I watched, and there were several moments where I was just overwhelmed with emotion in the best way possible. I was tearing up at points like, holy crap, I can't believe something I created 10 years ago is sitting here in this wholly new form that's so above and beyond what I ever imagined it could be, being performed by all these really talented people. And I'm just watching it like, how did this happen? And it was one of those really cool moments. I was tearing up. I was like, oh my God, this is so much. It's so cool. And it was so great. After the dress rehearsal was done, Mike brought all the actors and people out to sort of discuss how things went, you know, a little breakdown after the fact. Out of the blue, someone said, I gotta ask, Mr. Mim, what did you think of it? And I remember at that moment just being like, well, honestly, I thought it was fantastic. And there were several moments where I was just back here fighting tears because I'm moved beyond words with how awesome this was. I gotta say, I remember that moment because it was one of those moments where when I said that, I was just being honest and earnest about it. And like Mandy, who you know from Demon with the Atomic Brain, she played Stephanie Yates in it. She just goes, aw. And I could hear her do it. And I knew she meant it. She wasn't being like sarcastic. She was just like, aw, that's sweet. But it was super loud. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's good. I liked her reaction. But I remember her doing that because it made me kind of laugh. Because she did it so loud and everyone was like kind of giggled about it. It was like, aw, that's so sweet. I was like, well, no, you guys did a great job. I love it. And so the next day I came back and I filmed the second dress rehearsal because, again, it gave me more footage to work with when I wanted to edit everything together. And then the show. I filmed every night. I had the camera in different places. Surprisingly, the audio turned out really well. The image was pretty good for what it was, you know, for what we did. It ended up being decent that I was like, this is actually going to look and sound pretty good. I'm super excited by this. Jesus, I say excited way too much. It was really cool. And I was super happy just with everything. I had such a great time, and it was fun being led into that world of theater like that in a way that I had never been before. I got to go backstage, and I remember distinctly talking to Mandy when we were signing posters, and people who had contributed a certain amount to the production got a poster signed by the entire cast and crew and me and Adam and everybody. And I remember I was there right when Mandy had come in and she was doing it. And I remember talking to her about it. And I asked Mandy, I was like, hey, would you ever want to be in a movie? And she's like, yeah, absolutely. And so that was actually why and how she ended up in Demon with the Atomic Brain, was that moment of just like, hey, would you ever want to be in a movie? We were kind of joking around and just sort of laughing. I was like, I need more female leads in my movies. I think I'll ask her if she wants to be in a movie. And then when I finally did start making Demon with the Atomic Brain, I realized this would be a good movie for Mandy. Of course, that ended up being the only movie she was in, but that's neither here nor there. You know, I thought it was so cool. Like, Greg Kernkamp was super nice, and he did such a great job as Sven. And I lost touch with Scott Tallman over the years after Destination Outer Space. And honestly, I don't know that Scott and I ever really got along that well. Both have strong opinions about things sometimes, and I didn't always agree with his approach to things. And after 2010, like, he kind of rubbed me the wrong way once or twice. When we were making Destination Outer Space, he had, like, made some changes to the script without actually talking to me about it first, which that definitely rubbed me the wrong way, and it was just like, okay. But also, like, he wanted to do more theater and be taken more seriously, and then he kept telling this story about one time that he went in for an audition for something, and someone, when they saw him, were like, oh my god, you're Sven the Canoe Cop. And then he didn't get the role. I got the impression, and other people did too, that he thought that he didn't get the role in that play because people saw him as Sven the Canoe Cop and therefore couldn't take him seriously. I don't know. We worked together well when we worked together, but then over time, we just kind of stopped talking, and eventually, like, he unfriended me on social media, and it was like, okay, well, that's pretty clear. That's pretty clear. We're not going to be working together anymore. So going into the Monster Phantom Lake, the musical, Mike Cook knew Greg Kernkamp from other things and asked him to do it, and I think Greg's great. And that's why I invited him back to play Sven in The Beast Walks Among Us, because it was just super cool. You know, you needed a Sven, right? And he did such a great job. I know I've talked about how Josh and I more or less went our separate ways and haven't been really friends for a long time, but I remember specifically asking Josh about the musical when I was starting to develop it in 2016, like sending him a message being like, hey, I want to do this thing. Are you okay if I bring the Canoe Cops into it? Because, you know, the Canoe Cops idea was always something he and I made jokes about when we originally came up with the idea when we were like 20. So I've always tried to at least be like, are you cool, since I'm now bringing Gustav and Sven into a different medium, going from movies to theater, are you okay with that? And he's like, well, if you're going to do the Monster Phantom Lake musical, it doesn't make sense to not have Sven and Gustav. And I was like, okay, good, we're on the same page on that. So he was cool about that. I mean, that's the thing with Josh and I. It's not that, like, we've been actively hating each other over the years. We just haven't been friends. We just haven't talked. A couple times I have got him to come to things or whatever, it's always been fine. So it was cool. Like, Greg was super cool, and just everybody on the production was really nice. A couple of the kids who played the teenagers started recording, like, a behind-the-scenes video blog that ended up on the DVD as a special feature. It was really fun to see their perspective of it and them being goofy and having a good time. And I don't know, it just, the whole thing was pretty damn magical. And when we finally got down to the actual run of it, which was, I don't know, 3 days or something, it was so fun, and it was so well received. And we ended up winning, like, an award. We came in third place, but we got third place for best new production in Eau Claire or whatever. I don't remember what it was, but I put it on the DVD. Voted third best whatever by Volume 1 magazine or whatever it was. Because I was proud. I mean, it was like, we did this thing, and it came out, and it was really well received. And it's amazing how many people I know who like the movies, who kind of avoid the musical because it's really not their thing. And then they finally give it a chance, and they're genuinely surprised by how good it is. And it's like, well, why would you be surprised if you like my movies, why the musical is good? And they're like, oh, I just don't like musicals. And I get that. But it's surprising how many people are just genuinely like, I can't believe how good this was. And it was so awesome to be there. The crowd was so into it. And one of my favorite stories having to do with the musical, the Perkins family. I've mentioned the Perkins family a lot because they're awesome people, big supporters, good friends, just really amazing, nice people. Every year they take like a big vacation with their whole family. And that year, when we did the musical, a couple of them left the vacation early specifically to go see the Monster Fan like the musical. And at the time, Barry Perkins, who has been in the movies, he's in The Beast Walks Among Us, he, at the time, didn't really know what the Mimiverse really was or why his mom and sister were so into it. He's told me that after they purposely left a big family vacation early simply to go see this thing, it made him be like, okay, what is this all about? And then he checked it out and he's like, okay, I get it now. This is cool. And now he's a big fan of the movies and a friend, so you never know. But it was so cool that they came specifically to do it. It was such a uniquely strange experience from my perspective to take a movie I made simply because I always wanted to make a movie that had some very, very minimal, mild success, be turned into something wholly different, and not only be able to experience that thing in that way, but then also to have it go so freaking well. Like, it was just crazy. And I credit that to Mike, who directed it, and Adam, who did all the music, and Ruby, and all the musicians who played live, the actors. I mean, it's something else, man. It's a whole different creature. And I really wish a theater out there would do it. If you are at all connected to a theater that is looking for unique, different, new theater that will bring in an audience because it is entertaining and it is funny and it is catchy as hell, you can do it for free. So contact me, please. We have everything you need, from a small theater to a big one. If you have an orchestra or you need pre-recorded music for the actors to sing to, we have everything. We have all the books. We literally have everything. So let us know. Contact me, please. So it went off without a hitch. It really did, as far as my perspective. And it was so great. And so we did the thing. We had a great time. I'm really happy we did it. It was the best way I could ever think of to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Monster Phantom Lake. I filmed it. I spent time editing it over the course of the next few months, while at the same time getting ready to release and releasing Wereskito and working on Demon with the Atomic Brain, which I'll talk about next month. I edited together the footage I had to make the DVD. We made it, and then we released it for Monster Day 2017. And just did a little screening at a theater in Eau Claire, which we haven't played there in a long time, and I don't even know if it's there anymore. And by theater, I mean play theater, like a little tiny black box theater that we showed the movies at a few times. So we did a little screening there of the production DVD, and it was mostly folks who were in the production or were like the musicians who could never watch the production because they were behind the stage. And so they got to finally experience what they had done. And it was hard to edit it all together because I ended up using takes from multiple nights trying to find what's the best rendition of this song and editing things together to make it work. It was different than editing a movie, but not that much different. It was a little bit harder because I had much less to work with. Ultimately, it was pretty damn cool. I'm really glad we did it, and I'm glad Adam approached me and that it worked out. And from that, we ended up finding a couple actors who ended up in subsequent films, and we ended up with a new Sven after the old Sven went on his merry way, and it's ultimately one of my favorite things that's ever happened, that we were able to do that. I mean, there's a handful of things that have happened over the years tied to my movies that really stand out as something above and beyond the normal experiences, and the musical is absolutely up there as one of the top. If you've never seen it and you're open to experiencing it, give it a try. Again, it's available on the Roku channel. It's available for rent on Amazon, or you can buy the DVD. It's available. You should do it. You should check it out. If you like my movies and you've been a little reluctant, it's worth the hour and a half for whatever it takes to watch. It is entertaining, especially if you know the Monster Phantom Lake. It's really fun to watch how it changes, but how it also stays the same, and then other people's interpretations of things. It's really cool. I really like it. And I really hope that you do too, and you're at least willing to give it a chance. And I should say, before I forget, one of the coolest things that Adam ever did is he took inspiration from the Mimiverse in that if you know my movies, you know that a lot of times I take inspiration from existing films or tropes. I made my William Castle movie. I made my giant spider movie, you know, my big bug movie. I've made my monster movie. I'm making a blob movie now. You know, I do these things, so I'm always paying homage to different things. The spaghetti western, whatever. Adam took inspiration from that and made sure that all the songs in the musical, each one pays homage to different composers. You have your Gilbert and Sullivan one and your whomever. I'm not a theater guy, but he explained to me. It was like a whole like list of like, well, this song pays homage to this one to this one, this one to this one. And so he took that and ran with it. So there's like deeper things with just the songs, and it's so cool. And you should definitely check it out if you haven't. Next month, I'll talk more about what happened after, and what happened after means the premiere of Where Skeeto, moving into Demon with the Atomic Brain. This has been an oral history of the Mimiverse. Stephen D. Sullivan and Saint Euphoria present Atomic Tales, stories of science, mystery, and excitement. This episode features the latest installment in our fantastic original series, Strange Invaders. Tonight, our agents take to the phones and delve deep into the unsolved files of the U.S. Science Bureau in UFO Switchboard. Join us now as we present another in our continuing series of Atomic Tales.
Yes, I'm looking for an astronomy chart from last night right now. I kept my voice calm despite being annoyed at my latest assignment. And what you saw was definitely the planet Venus. I know it might have looked like it changed colors, but that was just an atmospheric effect. Yes, I'm sure it wasn't responsible for your cow disappearing. Please check with local animal control. Yes, thank you. Have a good day. I unplugged the patch cord from the switchboard socket, hanging up on the collar. I resisted tearing the entire unit out of the wall and tossing it across the room.
Good job, Agent 3.
Gigi Brock piped. Our secretarial assistant and would-be agent in training beamed at me. She still had a lot to learn, but her enthusiasm always ran high. Not the job I'd rather be doing, I muttered. The office we worked in was narrow, cramped, and smelled of cigarettes and spilled coffee. Even though it was December, noisy fans in the corners worked constantly to keep the heat inside the room from becoming unbearable. Of course, the U.S. Science Bureau had no way of predicting a flu epidemic among our telephone operators while their boss, Janice the Voice Goodrich, was out on maternity leave. It was just rotten luck that I'd gotten hauled in as a temporary replacement, alongside Gigi and Shannon Doc Tarragon, though neither of them seemed to mind the chore. Personally, I'd rather have been hunting giant ants with Spider Squadron, or shooting down flying earwigs with Ace and Lucky Lucy.
Chin up, Rocky,
Shannon told me.
Keeping the public calm during this strange invasion is an important job.
I know, though I'd think your lab work is more important. Shannon and her dad were the big brains at the agency. Figuring out the nature of our enemy and how to stop them was their main job. In the grand scheme of things, World War II espionage experience or not, I was just another grunt. Doc chewed thoughtfully on the stem of her glasses.
Sometimes you can't solve problems in the lab. Just doing something different, even working a switchboard, can break a creative logjam. We've got a lot of data to sort through, and not a lot of that data connects.
So, you and your dad are stuck?
Gigi seemed both awed and a little worried. Shannon started to answer, but then picked up a ringing line instead. Gigi and I did the same. The phone calls always seemed to come in bunches. No, I'm sure it couldn't have been a giant ant. Again, I remained calm and confident, despite the panicked voice on the other end of the line. They're just shooting a movie in the area. Yes, in cooperation with the Army. The special effects can be dangerous, so be sure you and your neighbors stay inside and well away from the location. No, I don't know the release date or title of the film. Sorry. Yes. Thank you. Have a nice day. I sighed as I disconnected. A nice, normal day. I patched my line into the office of General Brock, Gigi's dad and the Bureau's military liaison, to make sure that we did have an army platoon or spider squadron working near Eureka, Nevada. Seemed like something big might be brewing out there. Thankfully, our units were already on top of it. Finishing her call, Gigi turned to Shannon.
Let me get this right. The bugs disintegrate, but not all of the weird creatures do.
That's our experience so far,
Doc Tarragon replied.
Agents 1 and 5 got us some good specimens, one of those giant shrews. But like the mutant geckos and that ape, or yeti if you prefer, we found no evidence as to what caused the animals to mutate to freakish size and behave so abnormally.
Donna's crazy huge, but she seems pretty normal to me,
Gigi offered. The doc teethed on her sunglasses stem again.
Yes, her condition is puzzling, as is a sample of her hair going missing.
She picked up another call.
U.S. Science Bureau, may I help you?
I'm just sick of battling monsters, I confided. There's no end to it. We put one down and another springs up in its place. Gigi nodded.
It's like somebody's got a creepy crawly factory or something.
Two more lines rang. Time to put out some more metaphorical fires. The incident in Blackwell, Pennsylvania was proven to be delusions caused by contaminated food coupled with local landslides, I lied. No, it had nothing to do with the previous reports of a flying saucer having crashed in the area. That was a meteor. It's just coincidence. Yes, we can send you the reports. As I hung up, though, I wondered if it was a coincidence. The world had gotten so strange in the last few years.
I've been thinking,
Gigi said as she rang off from her latest call.
Is it possible these monsters are being manufactured by someone? A lot of the early cases were clustered near Denver.
The same area as the Mansect case, I noted. And his mutation has to be related to Sister Starlight becoming that human bee hybrid that Ray, Agent One, reported last month. Shannon settled another call and turned toward us, seemingly pondering the idea.
My father and I think both of these cases are related to Honey from that mutant beehive 1 in 7 found.
Gigi brightened, obviously delighted to be putting together more pieces of our ongoing mysteries.
That was in Colorado, too!
But that honey got shipped all over the U.S.,
Shannon continued.
And we haven't had mutants everywhere, just random locations. We've scoured Dr. Hedison's notes for clues, but if either of you find something new...
She held up one of Hedison's notebooks. We'd all brought various case notes with us to pore over between calls. I wish the Mansect's body hadn't disappeared in that train wreck, I said. How could a big metal casket like that vanish without a trace?
Yes, baffling.
Shannon pursed her lips.
Examining Hedison's corpse might have explained his transformation. He wanted to create a radiation-resistant food supply and somehow ended up a victim of his own experiments. But how? Even his pre-Mansect notes are disjointed. He talks about strange dreams and lights in the sky.
Like Donna!
Gigi blurted.
Perhaps.
Shannon admitted.
But he said the lights talked to him. That's clearly unhinged. He also wrote that he hoped a Dr. Atwill could solve his problems.
I spent more than a week trying to track him or her down, I said, but I couldn't find any trace of a scientist named Atwill. I figured Atwill might be some kind of a nickname or code.
Dr. Atwill?
A light bulb seemed to go on over Gigi's head.
That could be a movie reference. Lionel Atwill was an actor who played a lot of mad scientist roles in horror movies back in the 30s and 40s.
I arched my eyebrows at her. So? Shannon looked bewildered, too. Gigi reached for a stack of books from Hedison's lab.
It's just, I think I read something. Just give me a minute.
She got her wish, because at that moment the phone started ringing again, which kept Shannon and me busy while Gigi searched Hedison's records.
Aha!
Gigi blurted so loudly that Doc and I nearly dropped our connections.
What is it?
Shannon asked as we finished our calls.
What did you find?
It's here, in Hedison's old college yearbook.
Gigi held out an open page from the volume for us to see.
Hedison mentored under a Dr. Xavier Mim. Get it? Atwill played a Dr. Xavier in a film called Dr. X. If Atwill is a nickname or code, it could mean his old boss, Xavier.
That's a bit of a stretch, Gigi, I opined. But now Doc Tarragon's face lit up too.
Except that I've seen that name Mim before,
she announced.
In the list of contaminated honey shipments.
She dug out the receipt book of the late hideaway honey magnate, Mr. Gordon, and paged through it.
See, here. Regular monthly shipments right up until Gordon's death.
And it says here that Dr. Mim published a research paper on, quote, adapting life to adverse conditions, including radiation and the vacuum of space, unquote.
Gigi added. I nodded. The strange picture seemed to be coming into focus now. That doesn't sound too far off from the experiments that turned Dr. Hedison into the man sect. Mim. What is that? Chinese?
I think it's Norwegian,
Gigi replied. Now I was on a roll, too. Could this Mim be part of a communist plot, in it together with Tanya Ruhoff and the Russians? We know Soviets are mixed up with all of this somehow, even though that spy told Ray they weren't. Could Mim be unleashing these monsters on the United States deliberately? Shannon shook her head.
Too soon to tell. But this isn't any swamp gas or weather balloon or some form of mass hysteria. This Mim connection is the first solid lead we've had in ages.
She got up from her switchboard station.
I'll talk to my father and General Brock, too. If this notion pans out, we need to marshal our forces and get on top of it. You two hold down the fort while I'm gone.
Without waiting for us to respond, Doc stormed out of the office, heading for her father's lab. Gigi and I shrugged at each other as another barrage of phone calls began. I picked up the nearest line. U.S. Science Bureau, may I help you? Yes, we've had other calls about a giant woman rampaging through Reno. That was a few months ago, and it turned out to be the malfunction of an experimental 3D projector, plus a tornado that hit the downtown area.
This has been an original story of Strange Invaders, part of our ongoing series of
Atomic Tales,
brought to you by St. Euphoria Productions. Tonight's episode, UFO Switchboard, was written by Stephen D. Sullivan. It was produced and edited by Christopher R. Mim and read by Rachel Grubb, who played Agent 3, Suzanne Rocky Rockford, and featured Lisa Sancello as Dr. Shannon Z. Doc Tarragon and Gwen Ruhoff as Agent in Training Gloria Gale, Gigi Brock. Be sure to tune in next month for more Atomic Tales. Please support the films of Christopher R. Mim at SaintEuphoria.com and the work of Stephen D. Sullivan via his Patreon at PaySteve.com. Join the conversation at the Monster Conservancy at SaveMonsters.com. All elements of this episode are copyright 2023 by their creators and may not be reproduced or reused without permission. Atomic Tales and Strange Invaders are trademarks of Stephen D. Sullivan, all rights reserved. This is the St. Euphoria Audiocast Network. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you. I hope you get a chance to see Annihilate All Humans. If you have not, you should. If you have and you like it, I'm happy. If you have and you didn't like it, watch it again because you're wrong. I hope you enjoyed this month's episode. I had a good time recording it, and I hope if you get a chance, please contribute to the WAD at SaintEuphoria.com to help make sure it gets made. And if you want to be a producer, you can, and then you get to come to the producer's picnic, which is a good time. And every year I'm going to try and mix it up a little bit, so it'll be different next year. Who knows? Maybe instead of burgers, we have hot dogs. Whoa, I know. I'm pushing that envelope. You could come along for that ride if you want to see just how far I will push that envelope. In the meantime, as I always say, be good. But if you can't do that, be good at it. I will talk to you again next month.